Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5032, John F. Banzaff, Executive Director of Action on Smoking and Health, ASH and Sotera Inc., doing business as Enjoy versus Food and Drug Administration et al. Appellants. Ms. Klein for appellants, Mr. Gare for appellees.
May it please the court, Elisa Klein for the Food and Drug Administration. The district court held that an electronic cigarette cannot be regulated as a drug or device unless it is intended for a therapeutic use. As we've explained in our briefs, the ruling rests on a misunderstanding of the Supreme Court's decision in Brown and Williamson. The Brown and Williamson decision rested on three related reasons when the Supreme Court rejected the assertion of jurisdiction over cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. And none of those reasons is applicable to a product like an electronic cigarette. The first reason was that cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, because of their inherent physical properties, are necessarily an unsafe means of producing any pharmacological effect, and therefore would have to be banned if regulated as a drug or device. The Supreme Court held that other six specific federal statutes that specifically regulated cigarettes and smokeless tobacco showed that Congress did not intend to have these products removed from the market. And the Supreme Court explicitly also invoked the common sense understanding that there was a major domestic tobacco industry and that Congress had not delegated to the Food and Drug Administration authority to remove these products from the market. And then the third reason was that those specific statutes were in turn ratifying FDA's consistent position that it did not have authority to regulate cigarettes and smokeless tobacco.
Well, the way the court phrased it, however, was that FDA's longstanding position was that it doesn't have to it didn't have authority to regulate as drugs tobacco products absent therapeutic claims, and used the phrase tobacco products throughout the opinion in all the key parts, and so it didn't use
it
cigarettes.
It also used the phrase therapeutic claims throughout. I counted eight in just a casual, not using electronic searching, but just the old-fashioned way.
Yes. I counted 88 tobacco products, too.
Well, trying to answer both questions, again, actually, most of the time the Supreme Court said tobacco, and as that term was used by FDA, tobacco products, they were talking about products that really have tobacco in them. They're talking about cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, which were the products that were the subject of the 96 rule before the Supreme Court. And until, I'll discuss the new legislation, but until 2010, tobacco products wasn't a defined term. And it's only now that it's both defined to include products derived from tobacco, but then explicitly to exclude products that are drugs and devices. So the Supreme Court wasn't using a term of art. It was using a colloquial phrase.
Do you agree that e-cigarettes were tobacco products as the phrase was used in Brown and Williamson?
No, absolutely not. Electronic cigarettes are instead like the Favor smokeless cigarette that FDA regulated in 1987, or if you want to scroll forward to 2008, after Brown and Williamson, Nicogel, which was a hand gel that was meant to satisfy a nicotine craving while you're on an airplane or in a restaurant or a bar, a place where you're not allowed to smoke. So no therapeutic use, just delivering nicotine for pharmacological effects. And what FDA said is, no, you're not within the holding of Brown and Williamson. You concede that you're not a cigarette or smokeless tobacco, which are defined terms. And those products were subject to the specific alternative regulatory scheme that was crucial to the holding of Brown and Williamson. The Supreme Court, nothing suggested that all of these isolated nicotine products were totally unregulated by anyone unless therapeutic claims were made.
I think there are too many negatives in that sentence.
Okay. The products like the Favor smokeless cigarette.
Favor is the one that they didn't talk about. Is that correct?
Correct. They didn't talk
about
it.
One famous episode that is not discussed in Brown and Williamson, although historically before it. And I think if you're focusing on that, that's not a good move for interpretation of Brown and Williamson.
But what we know is that the Favor smokeless cigarette was not covered by any of those six statutes that the Supreme Court was relying on in saying that it doesn't make sense. Congress specifically addressed cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. And, you know, when it may have used the shorthand tobacco products, but those statutes, it's the Federal Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act, the Comprehensive Smokeless Tobacco something act.
If you put so much stress on the six particular statutes, if that's what was really driving Brown and Williamson, why did the court in Brown and Williamson never recite the precise coverage of each of the six statutes? In other words, talks about tobacco products as customarily marketed, uses that or therapeutic goals constantly. So it seems to be a principled decision by the FDA that the court was latching on to, namely tobacco products marketed with therapeutic claims, and so it naturally had no interest in the specifics of the statutory coverage.
No, again,
your theory requires it, I would think, to enumerate particular items covered and not covered.
No, because there was no question that the formal name of the FDA rule was assertion of jurisdiction over cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. There's no question that those products were covered by all six of the federal statutes. And that's why I'm saying tobacco products was a shorthand, colloquial reference to the very products that were the subject of the assertion of jurisdiction.
That would still leave the references to therapeutic claims and as customarily marketed as complete and utter surplusage.
No, because FDA, and FDA was obviously totally candid about this with the Supreme Court, saying, yes, before 1996, we disavowed jurisdiction over cigarettes, it would say, you know, tobacco products used for smoking and chewing, unless those products were marketed with therapeutic claims. And it's hard to imagine in modern times, but in the 50s, sometimes cigarettes would be sold to relieve respiratory illness. So even the products over which FDA had always disavowed jurisdiction before 96, even those products, FDA said, in the unusual circumstances in which they're marketed with therapeutic claims, we can reach them notwithstanding the specific statutory provisions that regulated cigarettes and smokeless tobacco.
Even FDA in its submission to the Supreme Court in Brown and Williamson used the phrase tobacco products, and at oral argument General Waxman used it. You just tried to define it a little more narrowly, but the quote shorthand was being used by everyone, and as Judge Williams says, it always came with the tagline as customarily marketed or as marketed without therapeutic claims.
Yes, but the only issue before the Supreme Court was an assertion of jurisdiction over cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. So it's not surprising that everyone referred to those as tobacco products. It's what the FDA said in its rule, too. It was just the quick way of saying cigarettes and smokeless tobacco.
Were there any other kind of tobacco products at that time that the FDA didn't regulate?
Well, there were cigars and little cigars and pipe tobacco. There are all sorts of products.
Other than the ones referred to in the Brown and Williamson.
Well, Brown and Williamson didn't refer. The assertion of jurisdiction was not over cigars or pipe tobacco or little cigars. It was only over cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, particularly because of the use by underage smokers.
So on your theory, then, Brown Williamson left the FDA totally free to regulate under the Food and Drug Act cigars?
There, you could imagine an argument about cigars that would have been analogous to the argument about cigarettes. There's another regulatory scheme, there's a domestic tobacco industry that we're protecting. It's not an argument that could be made about an isolated nicotine product.
Why not just use the line, the simple line that the Supreme Court used? The line was those products marketed with therapeutic claims and those that were not. You were just proposing, I think, some kind of tradition, deeply rooted test for whether a tobacco product is going to come within Brown and Williamson or not.
No, it's not that. It's that if you look at these isolated nicotine products, they weren't subject to any other regulatory scheme. So the theory would have to be you could sell a nicotine lollipop unregulated unless you made therapeutic claims. And no one thought that. FDA, again, Favor, 1987.
Those were marketed.
It was really not before us because it was not before the Supreme Court in Brown and Williams.
Yes, but the Supreme Court was talking about how Congress ratified FDA's position. And FDA's position didn't treat a product like Favor the way FDA itself had treated cigarettes. And then, again, in 2008, when Nicotil said, I'm also a customarily marketed tobacco product. I don't make therapeutic claims. FDA said, no, no, that's like way over reading Brown and Williamson. You're not subject to
it. But we don't owe any deference to the FDA's reading of Brown and Williamson, do we?
That is correct. However, the Supreme Court relied in part on FDA's own understanding of its authority.
That was its prior statements of its authority, not its, it didn't incorporate a sort of rolling adoption of the FDA future positions.
Just from a straight common sense perspective, the rule in Brown and Williamson made some sense because the Supreme Court said, look, Congress has regulated, I'm just going to use cigarettes as the shorthand for cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, but Congress has regulated cigarettes. We know Congress meant for cigarettes to stay on the market. We have six specific statutes that regulate them, or five if you don't count the smoke list, and they have to bear warnings, they can't be sold to children, they can't be advertised by the FCC. None of that would have been true of electronic cigarettes or Favor or Nicotil. And so that would require the Supreme Court to say nobody regulates those products. And there's nothing in Brown and Williamson to suggest that it meant to leave totally unregulated products that just deliver nicotine. And the other conclusion of the Supreme Court.
There was discussion in the briefs about the nicotine inhaler, I think. So
well, there's
it was before the court. I mean, the reply brief footnote discusses that. I realize it's not in the opinion, that's a thin read, but at least there was some awareness of other things.
And the Supreme Court certainly didn't call into question FDA's longstanding regulation of nicotine delivery devices, like the inhaler, the patches, the gums, the lozenges. I mean, Pfizer sells a prescription nicotine inhaler. If the plaintiff were right, anyone could just sell that same inhaler, not go through the clinical studies, not have to demonstrate safety and effectiveness, just don't explicitly say this is to help you reduce your dependence on cigarettes. It just doesn't make any sense.
You invoked common sense, so taking a step back here, your position would mean that FDA could ban electronic cigarettes but not cigarettes. And does that make much sense to attribute that intent to Congress?
Well, to be a little more precise, the question for FDA, for electronic cigarettes, like for other nicotine products, pure nicotine products, is this safe for any use? So, for example, if it could be shown that an electronic cigarette is a safe method of nicotine maintenance, so instead of cigarettes, you use an electronic cigarette for nicotine maintenance, that could be approved if the science supports it. And in fact, in the new legislation.
What I said is correct, right? FDA would have the authority to ban electronic cigarettes, but not cigarettes.
Yes, assuming that there's no scientific evidence to show that an electronic cigarette could be a safe nicotine maintenance therapy. I want to finish what I was saying, that in the new legislation, one of Congress's concerns was to encourage more and better nicotine replacement therapies, and it's directed FDA to fast-track those applications, and particular, what we're talking about, extended-use nicotine replacement products, because the ones that are currently approved are designed for short-term, 12-week use, and so there's a workshop that's being convened, and this is why FDA has written to the Electronic Cigarette Manufacturers Association, encouraging the firms to come to FDA, to work with FDA, to see if these products could be used for nicotine maintenance, just like methadone maintenance for heroin addicts. is this a safe means of, instead of smoking cigarettes, which, you know, the harms are well known, would this be a safe and effective substitute? But that's all drug regulation. And so this is the reason discussed in the public health amicus brief why it is so important that, why Congress carved out from the definition of tobacco product any product that's regulated as a drug or a device.
And what about cigars again? Because although evidently not covered, is that correct, not covered in the 1996 rule, they're explicitly covered in the later statute. Of course, that doesn't tell us what the Supreme Court meant, but it's perhaps a congressional view as to what the Supreme Court meant. And they have, cigars have certainly the first two of the characteristics that you mentioned, right? On a health basis, they would have to be banned at least as much as cigarettes, right? And they're part of a great American industry.
I want to be careful not to get out ahead of the Food and Drug Administration, which hasn't addressed cigars.
But it has explicit authority to.
Well, the way the new legislation works, FDA is given explicit authority over cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, cigarette tobacco, and roll-your-own tobacco, and any other tobacco products that the agency deems by regulation to be tobacco products. And a different provision provides that FDA can't ban certain products, right, including cigars. FDA has not yet deemed any, it hasn't yet completed its regulatory process, and it hasn't yet deemed any product to be a tobacco product. So I'm just saying the analysis of cigars is different.
So the statute says they can't ban cigarettes, which seems to presuppose that they could, on the deeming provision, deem them tobacco products, or deem them worthy of regulation. Cigars,
yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Could you talk about the Tobacco Control Act then?
Yes, Your Honor. And it was agreed in district court, I think correctly, that the Tobacco Control Act doesn't change the answer to the question that's before the court. And in fact, these products were detained before the Tobacco Control Act was even passed. And the Tobacco Control Act, while defining tobacco product in a way that is expansive, specifically and repeatedly says, product that meets the definition of a drug or device or combination product is not a tobacco product. The drugs and devices are regulated under the Drug and Device Authority, and nothing shall alter or constrict that authority. So the answer to the Tobacco Control Act question is the same as the answer to the question of, can these products be regulated as drugs or devices?
You think that the Tobacco Control Act defines tobacco product differently from how Brown and Williamson used the term?
Yes, Your Honor. Brown and Williamson, again, we just think it was using it as a shorthand for cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. It wasn't prejudging one way or another cigars, other products that,
Let me try another theory and tell me why this is wrong, that the Supreme Court said tobacco products, that the line they drew was customarily marketed versus not, left a gap, a regulatory gap. Congress comes in and fills the regulatory gap and now provides a different set of authority over those tobacco products as defined here as customarily marketed. Isn't that a pretty sensible way to put the pieces together here?
Well, I think I'm probably repeating things I've said, but no, not for products that just delivered nicotine, which were never subject to any alternative regulatory scheme. That wouldn't have been just a gap. That would have been like a void. Unlike cigarettes, which were subject to all sorts of regulation, there was no alternative regulation of products like nicotine lollipops or nicotine patches or the Favor. I know the court doesn't like that. Inhalers, all of these products, they were not subject to any other scheme. So we do not think that is...
That happens not infrequently, that the court rules there's no authority over something and Congress has to come in and provide authority.
It wasn't before the court, the question of the nicotine patch, and there's absolutely no reason to think this court was calling into question FDA's longstanding regulation of that type of nicotine product, where it's not, the problem wasn't that it was being nicotine, the problem in Brown and Williamson is if you deliver nicotine through the cigarette device, it's inherently unsafe because of the way when the tobacco is lit and you smoke it, it causes cancer and all sorts of other harms. It's just the same analysis doesn't work when you're talking about just delivering isolated nicotine, and that's why FDA has been able to approve all sorts of isolated nicotine products.
So I understand, because I might be confused. What tobacco products were marketed without therapeutic claims as of Brown and Williamson that would have been left in a regulation-free zone if the theory I outlined earlier were correct? I mean,
the Faber cigarette is the best example pre-Brown and Williamson that we have. We don't have specific examples, but the theory...
Because the other examples you gave are marketed with therapeutic claims, correct?
But as it happens, like nicotine lollipops, nicotine hand gel, not hand gel, sorry, nicotine water, as it happens, those were marketed both with structure function claims and therapeutic claims, mm-hmm. but... Our point is,
were regulable. So when you were saying the sky would have been falling as of Brown and Williamson because there would have been a regulation-free zone, it really is just Faber.
No. Because nicotine lollipops, if the manufacturer mm-hmm. could just remove the express therapeutic claims, the theory would be they could just sell them. So this doesn't make any sense. You could just sell a nicotine lollipop.
Makes a lot of sense. To the extent that the FDA drew a distinction based on the presence or absence of therapeutic claims, this would just be an endorsement of that, and if Congress didn't like it, it could modify the statute.
It drew that distinction only for cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. I mean, this is, we've shown at length in our reply brief, that therapeutic claims they've never been the only reason that a product is a drug. There are all sorts of products like no-dos and tanning booths.
That's outside the tobacco context, though. And we're
Faber cigarettes.
That's the one. There you got one.
Faber,
you have one.
It's a Nicogel. I have two. I realize one is after Brown and Williamson and one is before. So we've now flanked Brown and Williamson but also just why there would be no reason to think that you could sell a nicotine lollipop for a recreational nicotine hit, and nobody could regulate that.
There's a lot of reason to think it. I mean, the presence of subsection B in the statute suggests that Congress cared a lot about the presence or absence of therapeutic claims, right? The presence of C obviously complicates matters, but...
Well, it not just complicates it. I mean, that's... C was added in order to bring within the definition of drug products that are not sold with therapeutic claims.
And it turns out, through years of FDA practice, that it didn't fully do the job, right?
No.
Because the FDA steadfastly insisted on therapeutic claims with respect to the tobacco products that it faced.
No, cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, not other nicotine products, and of course not non-nicotine products like caffeine pills, like no-dos. Nicotine products, pure nicotine, like the Faber cigarette, it didn't matter whether they were marketed with therapeutic claims or other types of drug claims. FDA concluded those were drugs. It was a special approach to cigarettes and smokeless tobacco because, as FDA explicitly said, if we regulate those because of their effects of the structure and function of the body, we would have to ban them, and we know Congress didn't want to ban them.
Go ahead. Ask you about what seems like a relatively unique procedural element of this case. So the only piece of paper we have explaining the government's position as an agency on this is the blocking order, whatever it's called. What's it called?
The detention order, with respect to Enjoy.
That's the most formal document we have. Is that right?
Yes, although it's applying the same principles that were discussed in the Nicogel proceeding, where the principles are set out at much greater length.
This order says and, right?
Yes.
It says both.
Yes.
You know, it's being detained because it is both intended for effect on the body and because it's intended for therapeutic effect.
Yes, right? Correct.
So do we know from that whether the government's position was that it had to have both or whether it was just one or the other?
No, it's always been one or the other, and this is in the Ninth Circuit in that storage container case.
I know what the government's overall position is, but with respect to this particular item, do we know whether the government was intending to detain because of both or because of one or the other?
Well, I know that the FDA's position now, consistent with what it said previously, is either is a basis for regulating a nicotine product, not a cigarette, but, you know, pure nicotine product as a drug. There's no administrative record, as Your Honor is pointing out, on NJOY's products in particular. So I don't have anything
there's
else.
There's some vague reference and maybe a footnote. Is there an issue here as to whether this is being marketed with a therapeutic claim?
It's really open. We don't have an administrative record on the way these products are being marketed, and it's open. The district court said, well, if you come forward with evidence that it's being marketed for therapeutic use, then, you know, even under the district court's reasoning, the products would be unapproved drugs.
Well, what proceeding would have gone? I mean, I take it that there's really no final agency action here. There's an argument about, or a conclusion by the district court that it would be futile, but I guess one possible consequence of final agency action might have been a determination about whether or not there were therapeutic claims. Is that right or not right?
That is correct. But again, the question of how a product is marketed can change over time. And the way these detention orders works, it's not literally that FDA is detaining that particular batch. They just get returned and the company disposes of them elsewhere. And so the question, like, is FDA limited to regulating electronic cigarettes only if they make therapeutic claims?
Right, but in order to detain these, in other words, I guess what I'm asking is whether both sides are asking us for an advisory opinion on what the FDA is limited to when this case itself might be resolved on the facts of the case by a therapeutic claim, or does the FDA think there is no therapeutic claim here?
Well, again, these products were detained, I think it was over a year ago.
I don't mean these specific products, but the way in which this company is marketing the products.
I believe NJOY will stand up and represent that they don't make therapeutic claims. And so if the court is asking whether there should be a remand for development of the evidence, we don't actually think that makes sense. I mean, the court would certainly have discretion, but at this point, the district court has issued a definitive legal ruling that is, we believe, incorrect. It's denied reconsideration, and we probably would just be back where we started from. And there are lots of other companies that are also distributing electronic cigarettes. So it's a very important principle. We don't think it's advisory in any Article III sense, and we are under an injunction based on a legal ruling.
What do you say of the other side's position that you're not entitled to Chevron deference with respect to the Tobacco Control Act because you've not actually have any document except for your brief, which expresses your views on that statute?
Well, I mean, the first point is it's not, we don't regard the language of the Tobacco Control Act as ambiguous, since it explicitly excludes drugs. And so the issue of Chevron deference really only comes up if there were an ambiguity. If there were an ambiguity.
You have an argument in your brief that we should give you Chevron deference.
Well, it's, if there were an ambiguity, then we should get Chevron deference to our brief. I mean, as the Supreme Court said in Auer, the question is...
Auer was about interpreting regulation, and Mead sort of throws Auer overboard with respect to statutes, doesn't it?
No, the question is whether there's a delegation of authority to the agency, and here the FDA is explicitly vested with responsibility to determine what products it deems to be tobacco products.
By regulation, it says.
By regulation, but the absence...
Your brief is not a regulation.
No, that's correct, Your Honor, but the agency has not issued a proposed rulemaking to deem electronic cigarettes generally. I mean, it's not clear how else the agency would express its understanding of the Tobacco Control Act, except
for
a brief.
We have, as you point out in your brief, given Chevron deference to advisory letters, more formal things. Right here in front of us, we have nothing at all other than a brief. We don't have an advisory letter.
The court has a brief that represents the position, you know, reviewed at high levels at FDA.
The government says about every brief, and we never give you deference. So
the Supreme Court gives us deference to our briefs. I mean, we're often, the court calls for the views of the United States on statutory questions. HHS comes in.
You would describe those as Skidmore deference. Is there a case in which the Supreme Court, post Mead, has given Chevron deference to a government's brief, however well written.
I'm not aware of one, but again, Your Honor, since the agency's basic point is that the Tobacco Control Act explicitly defines tobacco product to exclude drugs. We don't believe the court needs to reach the Chevron question with respect to the Tobacco Control Act.
I suppose your position is if all we had in front of us were the FDCA and the Tobacco Control Act, you would win easily. It's the
yes.
Brown and Williamson that creates the confusion, and so I suppose your theory is interpret Brown and Williamson to the extent there's ambiguity there in the direction of the text.
Correct. Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Can you let's see, another question. Do you get? I take it you don't believe you get any extra credit from the language of the import statute, which only requires you to show that there appears to be a violation of the statute.
We've not made that argument. Unless there are okay. further questions.
We'll hear from Sotera.
Thank you, Judge Garland.
May I just clear one support. Piece of confusion? For some reason, on my docket sheet, it says Mr. Bonzoff is a... which I find it hard to believe he's on your side on this matter.
We noticed that on the way in, and I don't want to speak for him, but I doubt very much he is on our side in this case. I think it may be an error in the caption itself.
Thank you.
Your Honors,
or error in the docket sheets.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honors, I think what was perhaps most remarkable about the FDA's position in this case is that in the wake of the passage of the Landmark Tobacco Act, it has the unquestioned authority to regulate electronic cigarettes in all the ways that Congress thought appropriate to regulate cigarettes themselves. And yet FDA is here today claiming authority to regulate electronic cigarettes and, in effect, ban them as a drug under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. In that sense...
Are there differences between what they could do? I assume there's some reason why they want to do it under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act rather than under the Tobacco Control Act. For example, do they have to go? You don't have to go through an advance approval before you can market something under the Tobacco Control Act, while you would under the Food and Drug Act. Is that right?
I think that's probably right, Your Honor. I think that they feel that they want to take more aggressive action under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, including perhaps a ban, than the Tobacco Act would allow them to do. But I think, I mean, we know, based on Congress's recent action, what Congress thought was appropriate in terms of the agency's authority with respect to all tobacco products, including cigarettes. And so for the FDA to come here and say that it needs this authority under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, I mean, we respectfully think that that position is just wrong. I think FDA, in many sense, is asking this court for permission to go back to the future and regulate electronic cigarettes as drugs in the way that FDA sought to regulate all tobacco products as drugs in 1996. And we know from the Supreme Court that FDA's prior assertion of drug device jurisdiction over tobacco products failed, and particularly in light of the passage of the Tobacco Act, we think that this court should reject its interpretation here.
What about the idea that there's ambiguity in Brown and Williamson? A lot of debate about what they meant about tobacco products broadly or just cigarettes and smokeless more narrowly, and if we're going to face that ambiguity, why not interpret it in the direction of the statutory text, which, as you know, speaks very broadly and would give FDA broad jurisdiction to regulate e-cigarettes as drugs.
Right.
Can you respond to that?
I guess I'd make two points in response to that. First, at the outset, the FDA, of course, gets no deference on interpreting Supreme Court decisions. Second, as Your Honor's
point... I was talking more about why don't we interpret the if there's ambiguity in Brown and Williamson, why don't we have the tiebreaker be the statutory text, the original broad text to the FDCA?
Well, I think really the tiebreaker ought to be, Your Honor, what Congress thought when it was enacting the Tobacco Control Act of 2009. In that respect, what's really more important than this Court's own interpretation of Brown and Williamson is what Congress must have thought when it passed the Tobacco Act of 2009. And actually, Brown and Williamson, the Supreme Court, said something quite relevant on that, which we think ought to guide the Court's interpretation of the Tobacco Act. In Brown and Williamson, the Court said, quote, this is on page 157 of its decision, When Congress created a distinct regulatory scheme addressing the subject of tobacco and health, it understood that the FDA is without jurisdiction to regulate tobacco products and ratified that position. Well, in the Brown and Williamson case, the court was talking about various idiosyncratic statutes dealing with cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, and the like. Here we have Congress's definitive act on the subject of FDA's jurisdiction to regulate tobacco products defined in the broadest sense.
Well, then it's a little question begging, because then they say it doesn't move the line. They have the provision that says this does not mean an article that's a drug. And so that just gets us back to, what did Brown and Williamson mean?
Well, with respect, I don't think it does. I think what it shows is that Congress ratified the line that FDA itself advanced before the Supreme Court in Brown and Williamson, and that everyone believed at the time of Brown and Williamson and after the time of Brown and Williamson. If you look at FDA's brief in that case, and with respect, I think my friend on the other side is not being fully fair to the FDA's representations in that case. FDA told the Supreme Court, quote, until FDA issued the regulations at issue here, this is back in Brown and Williamson, the only instances in which it found that tobacco products were intended to affect the structure or function of the body involved cases in which there were expressed market claims of therapeutic value.
That was actually wrong.
Sorry.
Good
point. It was wrong, but leaving aside, and the government's point is that at least in those days, tobacco products meant a product with tobacco in it. I take it there weren't any e-cigarettes. People didn't know about e-cigarettes at the time, other than vapor.
I think that is the government's position. The government's position is that tobacco products, as used in Brown and Williamson, is not products with tobacco in them, but only cigarettes and smokeless tobacco.
That's right, and I think...
Your point was, I take it, that by using tobacco products, they meant anything that was derived from tobacco, and that's not under either of Judge Williams' interpretation of the government or my interpretation of the government, neither of which are entitled to Chevron deference.
I think the government today is maintaining that the FDA at the time of Brown and Williamson meant only cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. In fact, if you look at the briefs in Brown and Williamson, I think it suggests that the FDA had the literal interpretation of tobacco products. I mean, as Judge Kavanaugh...
I don't know what literal means. I guess I would say, if I think back to that time, tobacco products seems like a product with tobacco. Obviously, if there were a lot of e-cigarettes around at the time, then you wouldn't think that because there was something else. But
Your Honor, we don't have to speculate on this question because the government fortunately answered it in its briefs in Brown and Williamson. It noted in its reply brief that if the Supreme Court rejected its interpretation of drug and device under the Food Cosmetic Act, then it would have no jurisdiction to regulate nicotine inhalers that were sold for smoking pleasure. Well, that argument obviously did not move the Supreme Court, but yet the FDA is here today saying that it needs jurisdiction under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act to regulate something that is precisely like the nicotine inhaler that the Solicitor General referred to in its reply brief. And the same argument goes for cigars, and that's really the larger question.
That footnote's a little murkier than what you just described. I mean, it's phrased in kind of a triple negative, but...
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that from that footnote that FDA didn't have the crabbed view of tobacco products that it's advancing in its briefs here, that it's only cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, that it understood when it put tobacco products in the question presented, when it referred to tobacco products all throughout its briefs, that the issue before the Supreme Court was the one that all anticipated, which was the FDA's authority to regulate tobacco products. Its position today would apply equally to cigars, because cigars are not a cigarette, they're not a smokeless tobacco, they are a tobacco product. If this court agrees with FDA that has jurisdiction to regulate electronic cigarettes as a drug or device, then surely it has jurisdiction to regulate cigars as a drug or device.
Were there any statutes about cigars at the time?
Your Honor, I don't know the precise. I don't know the exact answer to that question. What I'm confident telling the court is that there was nowhere near the sort of parallel regulatory scheme that the Supreme Court pointed to with respect to cigarettes at the time of Brown and Williamson for cigars. I mean, and the argument that the Supreme Court referred to in its decision was pertaining to cigarettes and smokeless
tobacco.
Well,
the finding of Congress that tobacco is an important industry to the United States, I presume that applies to cigars. Cigars are made from tobacco, so I would assume that that would apply to cigars as well.
Absolutely. But I do think, and going back to what Congress intended in 2009, if you look at the findings that Congress issued in that statute and its purpose, they talk about the need to give FDA jurisdiction to regulate tobacco products, and they talk about the fact that FDA had lacked this jurisdiction before the Tobacco Act. And so this gets back to this question of what did Congress think it was doing, and what line did Congress ratify when it passed the Tobacco Act? And I think that the only, with respect, sensible conclusion is that Congress believed that it was acting in response to a decision that said that the FDA lacked jurisdiction over tobacco products, and Congress was giving the FDA the authority that it thought appropriate to regulate all tobacco products, whether it was a cigarette, a cigar, smokeless tobacco, electronic cigarette, or anything in the terms of the definition that is derived from tobacco, or nicotine, which is derived from tobacco.
What happens with their example of street drugs? Unregulable, because needless to say, the dealers are not advertising them as therapeutic.
Our view, looking back over history and looking at the statutes, that the only sensible line interpreting the structure or function definition of drug is that it's limited by claims of a therapeutic purpose. Now, of course, this court doesn't need to reach that broader question in this case.
So what does that do with street drugs?
Well, I think our position is that FDA would lack jurisdiction to regulate street drugs unless they were marketed for therapeutic claims. And we think that there is evidence in the record that FDA has taken that position before. We frankly think that the FDA has taken somewhat inconsistent positions on that. This court doesn't reach that question. I think it can limit its decision to tobacco products. And particularly in light of the significance of Congress's action in 2009, I think it makes it a much easier case for this court under looking at tobacco products and the broader question of authority to regulate other products as a drug or device when marketed without therapeutic claims. We do think that that is the sensible line. We think it's supported by the text of the statute.
So your view, for example, though still with respect to nicotine, where there are no claims at all, nicotine water, and they just leave off any claim, that would not be subject to regulation.
That's right, unless they were marketed for therapeutic claims. And most of these nicotine products are, in fact, marketed for therapeutic claims. If you look at, in the record...
If one company markets it with a therapeutic claim, your position is if another company doesn't, the other company is free to sell it, though, right?
I think that's generally right, Your Honor.
So therefore, it would be unregulable, the other company. As long as there's at least one company that's doing widespread advertising of nicotine water for therapeutics, and any other one can come in and just not advertise.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I'm not sure that it would be as much of a problem as you might be suggesting. I think there's a reason why people market nicotine gum for smoking cessation, because many people want to stop smoking. There may be a smaller category of people, or category of people who would wish to, you know, derive the pleasures that they would otherwise get from cigarettes from a smokeless product. But yet there's a reason why people are out there marketing their products as smoking cessation products.
I'm sure there's an easy answer to this. What about injectable nicotine? Is there some separate statute about drugs that are injected, or would the same be true, that they couldn't regulate an injection of nicotine?
I think if it's marketed for...
No, it's not marketed for...
If it's not marketed for a therapeutic claim, that's the line that we think is drawn.
FDA could not regulate it.
Not as a drug. It could regulate it under the Tobacco Act because it would be a tobacco product. It's derived from tobacco. So, I mean, this case is much easier, I think, than Brown and Williamson was. In Brown and Williamson, the Supreme Court was faced with the alternatives of, you know, say it's a drug, cigarettes are a drug, so FDA can regulate it, or say it's not, and my gosh, FDA doesn't have that authority. This court, if it holds that FDA lacks jurisdiction to regulate electronic cigarettes as a drug, Congress gave it all the authority it thought appropriate in the Tobacco Act. There was some question earlier about whether or not NJOY markets its claims as a therapeutic product. And I think factually that question is really answered by the appendix to the government's own reply brief, and if where they attach NJOY's marketing materials. And on page 3 of those materials, NJOY's materials say NJOY products are not a smoking cessation product and have not been tested as such. But perhaps more significantly for this court's purposes, the district court's preliminary injunction specifically gives FDA an opportunity to go back and argue that these products are marketed as a smoking cessation product. And to the extent that FDA can show that, I mean, I understood my friend here to say that they're not even going to try to show that, but to the extent that they could show that, then they would have authority and the district court's injunction would not apply.
I should know the answer to this question, but if I knew it, I've forgotten. Does Brown and Williamson, the opinion, talk about the nicotine products which the FDA was regulating and which were marketed with claims of therapeutic effect?
It does not, Your Honor.
It never talks about that.
It does use the broad phrase tobacco products repeatedly throughout its decision. And I think, and obviously, as I noted earlier, the nicotine inhaler was something that was brought up in the briefing. If this court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Does the government have any time left? All right, we'll give you a couple minutes. That's all right. I actually have a question. So why does the FDA want to regulate under the Food and Drug Act rather than and Cosmetic Act rather than the Tobacco Control Act?
Well, as the Tobacco Control Act, if you look at the statute, it's got two basic purposes. Reduce the harm caused by tobacco smoking, the tobacco problem. You know, if it's the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act. And that is by reducing new users and helping existing users to quit. The helping existing users to quit part, Congress understood nicotine products, isolated nicotine products, to be part of that solution. These are the provisions that say fast-track applications for new nicotine new smoking cessation products or nicotine, consider applications for extended use nicotine replacement therapies. See, this is why it matters. On the plaintiff's theory, if you can just sell electronic cigarettes without having to show safety or efficacy and just say, you know, get your nicotine hit from these, you destroy the incentive for a manufacturer to do the clinical studies and go through the work to say, use my electronic cigarettes as nicotine maintenance therapy. It wouldn't make economic sense. You'd be undercut in the market. Whether or not, it's the nicotine water point. If someone's saying, buy my electronic cigarettes because you can use them for nicotine maintenance instead of smoking and that's better for you, then it's clearly a drug and it requires a serious investment of resources to get FDA approval for that, which people won't do, manufacturers won't do if NJOY or other distributors, manufacturers can just sell the same thing, and as long as they say not a nicotine smoking product or don't explicitly say anything about smoking cessation, they can just sell them.
So your answer is we want to ban e-cigarettes if they're not safe. That's the short answer to your
the answer,
to Judge Garland.
Let me actually read what FDA just said to the president of the Electronic Cigarette Association. FDA invites electronic cigarette firms to work in cooperation with the agency toward the goal of assuring that electronic cigarettes sold in the United States are lawfully marketed. And what that means
is safe, right?
Safe and effective.
So another way to phrase it, we want to ensure that they're safe or else they'll be banned.
Well, we want to encourage the development of nicotine maintenance products that are not bad for you in the way cigarettes are, that would be a safe long-term alternative to cigarettes. So come work with us. And so, yes, I guess if they're unsafe, if that can't be shown or if it can't be done technologically, then they would not be approved.
And they'll be banned. And you can do that under the FDCA, but you couldn't do that under the Tobacco Control Act, right?
Is the gum, for example, that has been approved?
Yes, nicotine.
And that I assume, therefore, means it's been shown to be both safe and effective?
Exactly. Yeah. That's safe and effective.
And what about this nicotine water? Is that?
No, nicotine water was just
stopped.
Sold. They didn't go through the process of approval. Uh-huh. But there are other FDA-approved nicotine products, lozenges and the nicotine patch. Pfizer sells a prescription inhaler. So it's, you know, Pfizer spent all that money to invest in to say, you know, inhale this and use it instead of cigarettes. That's important for the public health. We want companies to be developing those products. So that's why it's not just that FDA thinks it matters. It's reflected in the Tobacco Control Act itself in those provisions that direct FDA to consider fast-track applications for new nicotine replacement therapies. And then also specifically, what's missing now from the market are products that could be used in the long term, like nicotine maintenance, like methadone maintenance, rather than just for 12 weeks, which is all we have right now.
Presumably, you couldn't ban this unless you could show it wasn't safe, at least in comparison to the Pfizer inhaler.
I mean, if a company comes in and says, here's my evidence, it's safe, an electronic cigarette is safe and effective for nicotine maintenance, so that instead of using a cigarette, you're using my product, that meets the showing. That's why the impression that these will necessarily be banned is wrong. It just depends on the technology, what the evidence will show about how these devices are for delivering nicotine. There's no inherent reason that a device that delivers nicotine, like all the FDA-approved devices, can't be shown to be safe and effective.
My
recollection, I haven't gone back to it, is that the Tobacco Act itself sets up a special program for tobacco products that let's say have therapeutic effect, but that help one control one's use, right? So isn't there, in order to be in that category, manufacturers of e-cigarettes have incentives to go through the hoops that the FDA may create for them. No? Why not?
I think that's a reference to the modified.
Yes. No. I believe you're talking about the specific products for reducing dependence on cigarettes. This is the provisions codified at 387R and that are discussed by the public health groups. These are the provisions that say FDA should consider a fast-track application for new nicotine products that can be used as nicotine replacement therapy. Instead of a cigarette, use this product. I don't know if we're talking about the same provisions, but that is what I was discussing.
So, that's under the FDCA.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry. These provisions are part of the Tobacco Control Act, directing FDA. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's a regulation under the FDCA.
Exactly.
Can I just ask a fact question? Were there statutes regulating in some way or labeling or whatever of cigars at the time of
There were statutory schemes addressing cigars. I believe this court's case, Swisher, maybe, I think has discussed the cigar regime.
How do you spell it?
S-W-I-S-H-E-R. My only concern is that may have been the 11th Circuit version of the same case, but this court has a decision that talks about it's mostly about taxation, but it talks about the cigar scheme.
What about in Brown and Williamson, the point Mr. Garr made in the reply brief that the government referred to the nicotine inhaler, basically said respondents concede that under their theory, nicotine inhalers would escape FDA review, in other words, be unregulable. You all put that before the Supreme Court as this is what's going to happen if you go with respondents, and the Supreme Court went with respondents.
Respondents were making a broad argument that the Supreme Court explicitly didn't address, which was that everything depends on manufacturer claims, and as long as there are no claims, then, intended use is a term of art that depends on claims. And I find that footnote somewhat opaque, and so as I read it, it was addressing that argument.
The argument that the courts today were going to go ahead with arguendo, that we don't need to reach.
Exactly. They didn't reach any of the broader arguments. They relied on the cigarette-specific and smokeless tobacco-specific legislation.
At the risk of appearing a fanatic, in Section 3, Purpose, Subsection 4, it talks about the purpose of overseeing and ensuring that there is oversight of the tobacco industry's efforts to develop, introduce, and promote less harmful tobacco products. Are you saying that purpose of the act is then shunted over into an amendment of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act?
No, and now I'll talk about the modified risk tobacco product provisions. Modified risk tobacco products are a subset of tobacco products.
Right.
So we're already now, we're out of the drug universe. The classic example is the light cigarette.
Yeah.
And the catalyst for that modified risk tobacco product provision was the light cigarette fraud that
right.
is discussed
right.
both in this court's RICO opinion and in lots of other places. And so basically, these were just two different cigarettes. You know, they both were real cigarettes. They had tobacco in them. They met the definition of cigarette.
Yeah,
and
this is broadly worded. This is less harmful tobacco products.
Yes,
right?
But tobacco products. And again,
I understand, but just taking the words as they're written for a moment, and taking the view that this is these products are regulable under this act, doesn't the FDA have authority under this act to draw distinctions between genuinely less harmful and not genuinely less harmful tobacco products, and therefore to create, I would think, an incentive system, which you said you were worried about, said the FDA, your client, was worried about?
The review provisions for modified risk tobacco products are not like the drug review provisions.
No,
there's no
they're
safety
what
and efficacy.
Congress thought was suitable in the comparison between certain between tobacco products.
Yes, but I guess so if you say my Marlboro Light is safer than my Marlboro Regular, you know, it doesn't have as much tar
but
in
you,
it.
You aren't saying that the substantive provisions implementing this purpose four are confined to classical cigarettes, are you?
No, but they are confined to tobacco products.
Can I ask, I thought that this distinction was the one set out in 387K, where there is defined in subsection B1 a modified risk tobacco product, which is for use to reduce harm or the risk of tobacco-related disease, as compared to C, which are tobacco-dependent, and those are certainly covered by the Tobacco Control Act.
Yes.
So, in other words, to lower, for example, the risk of cancer.
Yes.
As compared to tobacco dependence products, which are defined in C as a product for the treatment of tobacco dependence, including smoking cessation, which is not a modified risk tobacco product if it has been approved as a drug or device and is subject to the requirements of subchapter 5, which are the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, right?
Correct.
So in other words, if it has to do with lessening the risk of cancer or emphysema or something like that, then it's covered by the Tobacco Control Act, and if its purpose is to reduce tobacco dependence, then it's covered by the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act.
Part is only if it's a tobacco product.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
With respect to tobacco, whatever the definition, I know you're resisting Judge Williams' question on that.
Yes.
I got that point.
Yes.
But assuming it's a tobacco, even if it is a tobacco product.
Yes.
That's the distinction that the statute.
Yes. So if smokeless tobacco is sold, and this is actually happening, is sold as use this in order to wean yourself of cigarettes. So smokeless tobacco, so without question it's a tobacco product, then it's being used to treat dependence.
It's a drug.
And it's a drug. Even smokeless tobacco. Unless the court is
okay, no further questions. Case is submitted. Thank you very much.